In discipleship, it is important to be able to weigh or balance a sense of personal spirituality with commitment. And another important thing that I find, at least in connection with discipleship, is the fact that we are, as disciples, we are in this world, but we are not of this world. And I think that's a really difficult balance to attain, because it has often been used so that we as Christians just withdrew from the world, and that is not what it means. It means that we are sojourners, and it means that we are in solidarity with the world around us, even to the extent of suffering with the world around us, but that we do not accommodate to the world. And the world is here seen in a rather negative light, understood as the worldly powers, that we don't submit to the worldly powers. It is not negative of life as such, but as the worldly powers and principalities. And I think it is important that we work at freeing ourselves from the impact of the world. I think that it is, that there's a great danger that we accommodate too easily to the expectations of the world on us or our culture. I can think again of what will be my position as a pastor, how that it'll be so tempting to try to feed into people's expectations, because we all need affirmation. We all need to be affirmed in our worth, and we want praise, and we appreciate, you know, thankfulness. We appreciate to be able to do something for people, and we could easily come round to having the meaning of life issuing out of or defined by the world rather than defined by our faith. It is important not to accommodate to the expectations both from society outside the church, but also inside the church. So I think that if discipleship is really taken in all its radical meaning, it could even mean re-evangelization of the church, or revitalization of the church and its hierarchical structures, towards a new understanding of what the church could be or should be. And thus discipleship has a lot to do with being ourselves and being able to rest in ourselves, or rather being able to rest in our sense of God or God within us. And the understanding that how we need to rest in the grace of God in order to be able to give to others. That reminds me of Paul's insight, or his experience of God's response to him being, "My grace is enough," from 2 Corinthians. But at the same time, it is important that we are aware of how much our attitude and our understanding and our whole life is shaped by our living conditions, that we are, of course, not totally free or independent over against our living conditions, that Christian freedom is not something we possess, but that it is more Christian freedom is more a way that we walk in, and we have perhaps attained it to a certain extent, but it is still more a vision that we must try to work for or grasp. And therefore, both aspects are important. Spirituality is important to change our attitude, but also commitment is important to change our living conditions, because there is that interconnection that our attitude can change our living conditions, but also if we can change our living conditions, that could actually change our attitude, our spirituality. So that again brings us back to discipleship, the understanding of discipleship, that it must be a lifestyle where doing and talking and being become one with Jesus as the model for that. A lifestyle where there's no division or fragmentation or estrangement. And I think that holistic lifestyle is what the kingdom of God is about. And discipleship, or that lifestyle of discipleship, might be the only forum where living faith can actually take place, or where faith can live. And with both Kierkegaard and Bonhoeffer, that lifestyle would be, or would mean, to follow Christ. And discipleship should be both a sign and a witness and an anticipation of the kingdom of God. Another thing that I find is important for discipleship is that we are able to remain judgment-free, because if we have certain expectations on people, or if we're judgmental towards people, we keep people tied down in roles, and we keep people tied down in a vicious circle, which is the opposite of freedom. And also our own discipleship is limited by our judgments, and that would prevent the image of God in the world from evolving. We can just think of the story of the splinter and the log in the eye, or the account of the adulterous woman, how Jesus does not condemn. And I think the idea of dying to oneself or dying to neighbor, that at least one aspect of that very heavy concept is to be able to give up self-righteousness, to give up being self-righteous. And I think a challenge for us as disciples is to be able to discern the spirits of the time, what spirits work for the good of God and what spirits work against the good of God, and to be able to discern between false and true prophets, also recognizing that we might be false prophets sometimes in our self-righteousness.
So to speak.
Yeah, well, I would say try to give up self-righteousness in the first place, because self-righteousness really makes us very one-sided in our understanding. And secondly, by trying to be in touch with what is God's will through reading the Bible, through prayer, through the community and what happens in the community.
Is what I was thinking. Sometimes it's people who think they are discerning the spirits that become more and more self-righteous.
Yeah, that's a danger. Yeah, yeah.
Because they think they have the answer that this is right and this is wrong.
Yeah. That's where Christian humility seems appropriate. Anna, you wanted to say something?
No.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned yesterday in Renown, who sees solitude as the starting point on our spiritual journey, and that can lead to a transformation, which then again allows us to take up a compassionate discipleship. And in that whole process, we seek first or receive first healing of ourselves, and we're then able to pass on healing to others and to God's whole creation. And I think that I would even add that we would perhaps be able to heal God self. I think or with that I mean how we have often used God for our own purposes and misused God, misinterpreted God, and that the world has suffered from that, and that also God has suffered, and that God suffers insofar that God participates in life. So if we heal each other, if we heal creation, we also heal God. So with a spirituality like nouns, which seems very personal or individual, or emphasizing the vertical dimension, it still shows that that communion with God doesn't exclude communion with others, but encompasses all. Nouwen has an interesting observation of how our modern world is so wordy, and he calls for a single-minded attention to the word of life. And there are three aspects of silence. He says that first, silence or solitude make us pilgrims. And secondly, it guards the fire within, or the life of the spirit within us. And then thirdly, it finally makes us able to speak anew and speak with power. And the point is that our ministry should be the opposite of distraction. In our modern world, we easily get so distracted. And it's not the task of the church to keep people busy or keep people entertained and try to compete with what other activities are offered to people. That's a danger in a commodity world, that the church becomes a commodity church, and just give people what they want, and that Christianity is used to create a good feeling. And that means also that discipleship means to be able to discern between what the time demands or what the time wants, and then perhaps what the time needs, that the time needs something different from what it thinks. that it perhaps needs to be that it needs to be spoken against or challenged. And that reminds me of the whole problem of how we can minister in our situation in a world that is confronted with dangers like the nuclear war threat. How can we minister in the face of fear and despair on one hand, and then an optimism and a belief in progress, that progress and technology, etc., can solve our problems. That is an optimism that often, you know, seems out of place, and there's that tension between our optimism and our fear, our lack of hope. And then a third important thing to consider, in my opinion, is the balance between admitting our own weakness and vulnerability and believing in our own gifts or the spirit at work within us. And that means trying to balance my gifts and my efforts and my values with the work of the Spirit, to recognize that what I do is of importance and it makes a difference and it is God-pleasing that I try, but that I am not the Spirit, that I also be realistic about what I can do, and at the same time not allow myself to become complacent. The question of how far should I push myself? How far should I take authority?
Yeah. This last point you made, it really strikes me in a personal way, and the difficulty I can have even presently is feeling stifled. I'm kind of in between.
Yeah.
Recognizing my weaknesses and vulnerability, wanting to act and go off the path, so to speak, take the road less traveled. I'm just offering that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I know that sense of feeling immobilized often by the demands or the needs, and therefore I think that it's really important that we just look around us at the very close things and see, try to see what we can actually do in the context and the situation just around us.
That's where we meet our neighbor.
Yeah.
The other day you talked about the struggles of being spiritual or Christian in a real secular society, and I found that to be a real struggle in school camp with housemates and work partners being real hostile toward any form of religion at all. And I don't know, I'm just throwing that out because it was a struggle. And I've usually been in areas that's been real homogeneous. And I think the Northwest is, well, it's less churched and it's less acceptable to have that as part of your life work down in the Midwest. It's just kind of assumed in some ways.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm just interested in and how you go about centering amidst that, and I suppose it's certifying support groups and, I don't know.
Yeah, that's one of my own questions too.
Yeah, because I really found a real pulling away, and I was kind of irregular with church attendance at a Catholic parish, so I felt very at home at.
I think perhaps the first step is, like John mentioned yesterday, just to come so far that we feel comfortable with being religious or being known as Christians. I think that it's very important that people can feel that we are comfortable with what we are or what we stand for. But even to get that far can be difficult when you feel that people are skeptical of you.
They also ostracize you.
Yeah.
That's a fact. I think as long as I went along with my friends, our peer group, everything was kosher.
Yeah.
The minute I felt like this is not what I'm supposed to be doing, I didn't come across
that's
as being
really
judgmental,
difficult.
But just not participating.
Yeah.
You're ostracized.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah. You're reinforcing what you're
going to
be doing. It's
hard to lose a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And then you have friends who will accept you on those terms. And usually they are the ones who aren't in crowd.
Yeah.
For me, it's my experience.
That's again the expectations that we so easily feed into unless we make a conscious decision not to.
Yeah.
And then
I think for many of us who have spent any longer amount of time at home, and one becomes so conscious of that too, I'm certainly aware that as I seek for a place in the future, community is going to be so much more important, just recognizing that if you don't have some of that, and how do you find it out there? And for us, a starting place has to be a congregation, because usually, like we found in Spokane, we're not fortunate enough to get into co-workers or maybe even housemates who are going to share. But how important the congregational community becomes. Unless one is fortunate enough to find that.
Yeah.
I think about that more somehow in terms of the overseas are coming back. Are you going to a place where I could find that? Where I think before it wasn't maybe as important.
You didn't think about it when you thought about your work and place to be. But I feel that too. It's going to become important to feel that there's going to be some unity.
And I think it was a good experience for me to learn how to branch out and find my place and function in that setting, and that was really good, and that's what you to learn.
How do you deal with it at your workplace?
I guess by making friends who understood me, I did have some friends in town who that was a very important part of their life, and I think that's how I kind of handled it, but I just kind of kept it out of work. I mean, I will hope it would come through in the way I dealt with people, or
right.
My work itself, but I didn't talk about it.
I have a question probably for you, Jay, and for you, Jim. For your friends, did you think you were more of a curiosity or an object of being ostracized?
Ostracism. Only in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on individual terms, maybe some people would want to know what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe would want something that they liked, that they saw, that I might have.
Mm-hmm.
But as a group, no. No one would let on to that. You know, ostracism. That's how I feel. I have to go with my feelings and intuition sometimes, for the most part.
So basically, as a group, there was a kind of a peer pressure. Well, let's give John the Raz a little bit.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really malicious. Teasing, was it? Just really
no.
Not acceptance, I think you're saying. Not including.
I think, to answer that question, in my experience, I think it's mostly that people are uncomfortable, I find, if they're not comfortable with what they're doing in the first place, then you're not reinforcing it. So it's sort of, in a way, it's sort of their issue, but
make yours.
Yeah, well, I make mine, I guess. I felt that way with my housemates.
That's, I think, a context that that scripture about blessed are you who, what's the word, ostracized or rebuffed for my name.
Mm-hmm.
You're blessed. I think, a couple of thoughts come and go ahead. In an effort not to be pushy or judgmental, I think we're sometimes afraid to just affirm the rightness of our faith for ourselves. And
right.
It's a delicate thing because, you know, you don't want to be in somebody's case, but how can you really live in truth to your own values, precepts, without doing that wrong? I think living in a place where there's a lack of fellowship can be a major problem, but it's also an opportunity to see how much of our faith has really taken root and how much is what is in us, what is ours, as opposed to what was around us, and what is everybody else's, and an opportunity to grow.
I found that also in this last job, the last year, I had a very abusive supervisor who came couldn't get along with anyone and didn't like me from the first day. Spent her whole year trying to get rid of me, which doesn't work. But it was real tough, but it was interesting, and I struggled with myself because I had trouble fighting back. I mean, if she would really let me have it, I couldn't respond to her in the same way. So it was kind of an affirmation in a sense that somehow I was able to not be as controlled by her as maybe I thought I would. But she I don't know, in
yeah,
a sense
yeah.
kind of learned that I had the ability to go the extra mile if I had to. I'm sure there are all sorts of factors involved, but I think she thought I was really, she was, in my perspective, a person who would step over anyone to get with anywhere she wanted. And I didn't operate that way. And I think it really frustrated her.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, in that sense, it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I never...
Do that again.
No. But I really felt I couldn't operate under that set of expectations, and I was really kind of a weirdo around there because I wouldn't give it back in the same way she was handing it to me. And not that that was the best way, I think, you know, probably you shouldn't let people walk over you, but I mean still, it's kind of random.
I think that makes me think too that it works two ways. That sometimes we feel it more than it is. But you said it's often your problem, really.
Right.
Just like I have found so often among drinkers, that if you are a non-drinker, they give me more static as a non-drinker trying to get me to drink than I give them drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not trying to get them to stop,
yeah.
but
mm-hmm.
they're trying to get me to drink. And
mm-hmm.
I often think it's as much that somehow they don't feel quite right about it. It makes
mm-hmm.
them think maybe,
right.
you know,
yeah.
to think what they're doing if somebody hasn't joined them. And
mm-hmm.
so they put on a lot of pressure because then they don't have to confront what the behaviors about
sure.
their
mm-hmm.
actions and so on.
When people drink according
yeah.
with other people, how they drink. No one drinks with someone who doesn't drink as much as they do. So people find.
But what I'm thinking is, I think it really makes them as uncomfortable.
I think that's
an unfortunate situation. And sometimes also when we feel uncomfortable because of their reactions to us as religious or even worse, goody-goody or whatever it may be, that sometimes it's more our feelings than it really is theirs, that there is something there that they not only accept but sometimes do respect. But we don't realize that. We're so sure that they're making fun of us or ridiculing
yeah.
us or critical of us.
Mm-hmm. It often comes out quite differently.
We really have made a witness and an impression,
mm-hmm.
and we don't recognize that.
Well, I'd like to, as popular phrases, pigeon drop three things. One, I think that's an unfair generalization that people drink in the same crowd. With the same people that drink in a crowd with this people that drink the same amount. If you've hung out in taverns as much as I have, you've seen many, many different drinking patterns. People go out, one is designated drivers. It's pretty popular in Madison. There's a big campaign push for that.
Yeah.
And two, it's a lot cheaper to just drink club soda at a tavern and play and use the rest of your money for pinball, which is my big hobby and vendetta, depending upon which pinball machine I'm using.
I know what you're saying, though.
And,
in terms of...
But it is true. It's a generalization, but yeah, I'm drinking too much coffee and getting really paranoid. let's see, the other thing, let's see, it wasn't, blessed are those who are ostracized, is persecuted, which I think is a much stronger word. Ostracized, to me, means teased. And
shut out. Yeah, shut out. Ostracized, I think, is
you're
not included.
You're not.
Goes along with my other thing.
Oh,
it ties in. If you drink as much coffee, everything ties in.
That's right.
Drug abuse. Thin-skinned. I think as Christians, we're called to be as non-thin-skinned as possible. Don't let things bother you. If they want to tease you, hey, fine, go ahead, just say, you think I'm that way? Boy, who told you that? You know, that's silly. If you can be a comfortable person to be around with, depending upon your personality, people will feel free to talk about you and say, well, is it really true for religion? Really? Like, you know, for your friends. You know, individually they can come up to you because there's less pressure that way.
Mm-hmm.
I had a similar experience when I was with the Christian Ministries in the National Park Program. Labeled corporately from the non-ministry staff, employees, I was another one of those Bible thumpers. Quite a few Bible thumpers there too. Individually, there's quite a few fellows that were struggling with, well, maybe Buddhism. Oh, I have this life philosophy, and it's similar to Buddhism, and there's a little Christian ethics, and they'd come to me as a resource person. What do? You just sit there and listen. You say, well, sounds to me like you got a lot of Christianity here, you got a little Eastern thought here. Just help them clarify.
Something along that line of what you were saying, that we are called to be humble, and I think to me that has meant wanting to rest and not having all the answers, because I think that's an easy trap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've talked about this before, an easy trap for people even to,
so
they have to justify their faith or their existence, or, and sometimes there aren't.
I like that, and like share it for us, I'll be happy with the answers, but I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And I didn't express it yesterday, and it's not because Alana's not here. I wanted to tell her individually sometime too that I don't think it should be a constant struggle or so consistent. There's a difference there. Questioning the origins of evil and all that jazz. I think part of it for myself is that and all of our discussions have kind of helped clarify what some of my thinking is, that don't need to always be struggling with that. In fact,
mm-hmm.
I think it might be a sad fact if you're looking at that as the basis for your faith to be built on. Maybe any or all of you disagree with me, but you don't need that answer, I don't
mm-hmm.
think. Maybe don't want it, and maybe hopefully can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you know, Einstein says, I want to know God's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I don't. You know, then what's part of it is what's the unknown then?
Yeah.
Where is that leap of faith?
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, I don't know if that was all just kind of vague, or, but
no, I agree. That it's.
I think it can bog you down, and I don't want it to be bringing me, or I wouldn't want to see it bringing someone else down, you know?
Yeah.
What you said, Anna, at the beginning, discipleship has to do with our being willing, able to rest in the grace of God. And sometimes that's important. Not that we have to have all the answers, not that we cease from growing and seeking and learning more, but that also we can rest in the grace of God at the same time and not have to have the answer before the facility. Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that we stop questioning, because you always have to do that, but I wouldn't want to take one big issue and just not be content or comfortable with my faith at all, or with my gut feelings even, unless I just had a diehard response to some question in particular, like the origin of evil.
Yeah, I think you just reminded us about another balance, being able to rest in God and trust, and on the other hand keep working at a more conscious awareness of what God is.
Or changing our
understandings, yeah.
As we grow and learn.
I think it can take a lot away from the present, too. For whatever reasons, whatever's happening, it is happening, and we're living with it, and what do we do about it?
That's right.
In the way of another balance, it was just mentioned, I really like this idea of being thin-skinned. I think it's very Christian and gratifying. And I also have thought a lot about liking.
Kevin, he said not being thin-skinned.
Being thin-skinned means
I'm scared. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, okay. not being thin-skinned.
Thin-skinned, yeah.
Right. Being thick-skinned, as opposed to, I also like the idea of affirming rights. Just treating yourself like you would somebody else, saying I want to protect your rights and I want to protect my rights. But I guess I think it's probably easier to be too far on the protecting rights as opposed to thick skin, and that it's very gratifying to be able to give up rights as opposed to affirm them. And after you've, the feeling you have after you've just said, okay, I don't need that right, compared to the feeling you have after you've affirmed a right that you really feel you need, is usually different. And if you were to go to scripture, I was thinking that I guess what you find there is the idea of giving up the what you think are rights, the turning the other cheek, the extra mile, and the things like that.
Could you add any more, Yevon, to you made a statement about Christian freedom is not something we possess. This is where Christian freedom comes in, the idea of giving up ourself and it coming out like, but rather a way of, I think you expressed it as a walking toward or a growing.
I think for me it is tied in very much with my understanding of faith as a process, or conversion as a process, or transformation, because that is more tied in with my own experience, that it is a process, so that it is not something. Well, conversion can have that significant experience of a sudden change or a decision or a new beginning or whatever, but I think that it is also a longer process where we have to accommodate or integrate that that first experience of change. And I think it's the same with freedom, that that it is something that we have to live out, that it is not a possession once and for all that we that we acquire. And like with baptism, being baptized, we are Christians, but we have to live that out, what it means.
What are we free
Does that
from?
Make any sense?
What are we free from?
I would say that we are free from expectations and demands of the world on us, from the whole squeezing manipulation of our surroundings, and that's what that's what Christianity say that we are free as the children of God, but that is what I'm trying to say, that I think that it is partly reality and it's partly a vision, because we know at the same time that we're not totally free, that, that it is something that we have to work along all the time.
From the world's expectations, you mean
society? Yeah, society's expectations, people around us, expectations of our family as to what we should be, expectations of our friends as to what they expect us to be, cultural expectations of what a good life means, that it means education and a good job and getting married and have at least two kids, etc., etc. That we are strong enough in ourselves or in God to put aside these expectations and see what does a full life mean for me in the light of what is God's will for me, and that might mean quite a different lifestyle or a more radical discipleship than we're used to thinking in terms of.
Yes, I think of Christian freedom too, as well as being free from society's expectations and so on. Also being free, and certainly a growing process, but it's the only hope for being free from my own need and all that within me that I don't want, rather than limiting me, it's to free me from those things that I would not want to be attached to.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things when I hear freedom in a biblical sense, in a Christian sense, I think of free from the Ten Commandments. And I'm not really free from the Ten Commandments. I'm to realize.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what I read, but they become secondary to grace. But they're still binding. And apparently God gave the Ten Commandments to help us free ourselves. So even the Ten Commandments are freeing ourselves from sin, in sinful ways. Yet when that didn't work too well, Christ on the cross and grace came into the picture. But yet, I guess I'm asking a question. This is how I understand it. But how important are the Ten Commandments in our lives? I mean, we have some grace in the picture, which gives us freedom to be spontaneous in each situation relative to Christ, our bond with Christ, and be creative in that. And I guess there shouldn't be any question, but there is with me how how binding, how legal the system still is.
In the Bible studies they had this week, David was leaning on the Christ discourse, the last thing before, as it's recorded, the last thing before he went to Golgotha and the cross, and among them he's repeating over and over, if you are my disciple, you will do what I command you. You are my friends. And what his commandment was, to love. And so to me, the Ten Commandments, that is love. And if we are keeping the Ten Commandments, we are showing love. Yep. And so therefore that command is just covers them all. And Jesus did not free us from keeping the command. He said we are to keep his command to love. And that's what the Ten Commandments are too. So in that sense, it's a keeping of them, because if you're keeping them, you are loving. And so it is part of what we are commanded by Christ.
Did Christ saying that he came not to give the law, but to fulfill it?
It's awful hard to keep that law of love.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to be able to do it perfectly.
And that's why there's grace.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we are commanded, it isn't that freedom means we don't Christ. To be his disciples, he has said, if you want to be my disciple, you are too.
And we're forgiven.
My commandment, which is to love God and love my neighbor.
I can try my best and do a halfway decent job, but then what about the guilt that's left over?
That's where there's grace.
Yeah, I think grace is limited to the guilt that comes from not being able to carry out that freedom of love. But it's not something that takes the place, although it often does, of a desire or a responsibility to carry out the law. Yeah. And just fall asleep on it all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, certainly if you're older, it seems to be easy to carry out that law.
That's why we have to go back to roommates that don't affirm a faith in court situations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tear you down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, finally, I think that what the discipleship is about is about being real and be yourself. That discipleship is basically the process of becoming yourself, of taking over yourself and taking over responsibility in the light of what you experience as God's will for your life. Or with other words, that it's choosing to let your life be shaped according to the gospel story, or let your identity be informed by the gospel.
You see, that's about the same as any difference between becoming God, becoming Christ, and becoming yourself. Is it kind of all the same thing to you?
Yeah, I would say yes. That becoming myself would be to get in touch with God at work in me, Christ in me, the Spirit
losing
within
yourself,
me, whatever. Or myself, my sense of self being informed by God. And I don't think being a disciple means that you have to feel rotten about yourself or feel weighed down, or that you have to feel so sinful that you have to give up your own self, or that your own self has to die. I think it's more that our self is transformed by God, or informed by God, or purified by God. And talking about feeling comfortable in your Christian faith, I think that it is good if we can feel comfortable with who we are. I think we have more to give then. But at the same time, I think it's important that we are critical of our motives and critical of why we do things and critical of the danger of being self-righteous, etc.
And we were transformed, because when we speak of dying to self, it's not to remain dead, but it's to be transformed into a new life.
Yeah.
Not doing away with the life, it's just the death of the old life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so often not seen as a rebirthing experience, but a giving up only, And
yeah.
I don't want to give you that, Lord. I mean, that's why I got to keep that in myself. That constantly, piece by piece, thing by thing, that you don't want to give up. Because you don't know what it's going to be replaced with. And that part of your identity that you at least know that you have, even if it's right, can depend on. It's sort of scary, and that giving up,
mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the resurrection image is important not only in connection with Christ, but as a more general experience too. That resurrection can take place in a lot of little instances. That means a new start for us and a new courage.
Yeah, piece by piece.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience. Piece
by piece.
Yeah. This is kind of jumbled up. I was going to say, I'm really excited by the vision you have of this, and the clarity which you speak with. To me, it's real freeing and real challenging. And I'm just thinking about, you're talking about the difference between taking on the show and being freed and taking on being burdened by what's expected or something like that. And I'm just constantly amazed at the range of different Christian experiences. How there are some people who are, the difference in vision of that whole thing just amazes me sometimes. The same message, and it just.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree.
That's going to be a curiosity to get back to because of the where you were at the time before you left, like you said, that being criticized and ostracized or whatever, and then rebuilding that faith that was shaky in the first place, coming up here to get rejuvenated and revamped. How much longer we can maintain that stamina after coming back.
I think for me it's the contacts with people. Yeah, the community.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You have to find that community.
And not forgetting that we have a source in God's Word also in our own way of this movement. Speaking and being open, we talked about that a lot at the beginning, our openness to the two-way, or being open to knowing God's presence and listening.
I feel I'm open to God's presence, but have problems with the Word, the Bible, in itself, because it's contradictory in itself, and then having contradictions within yourself, that doesn't help. There are good uplifting things that are said and done in the Bible or by the different writers of the Bible, and that helps.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's still contradiction within it, which is somewhat confusing and irritating. But the main overall word is love.
In terms of alternative ways of healing or treatment.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because you can't always tell people that Christian way of doing things. Because
mm-hmm.
not Christians, they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Neumauer would say that the non-Christian, I shouldn't say the non-Christian, that people who are not cognizant of the spiritual
right.
side of them, there is no wholeness. Because man is and women are. We are spiritual beings, and we're physical beings and emotional beings.
Sure.
And so, and that's what you
is
that only when wholeness came about, I mean, was possible only for those who recognize the spiritual aspect also. So we can't speak of wholeness even and speak of it only in secular terms for me.
I'm not so sure because I think that there are people who are not Christians who have a very rich spiritual life. They just
that's what
I said.
That's what
if
I meant.
If you do not take recognition of
mm-hmm.
your spiritual side, then it isn't wholeness.
Yeah.
He just said secular, and I
what?
Said if it's only secular and spiritual aspect to it, then it isn't wholeness.
In a secular surrounding, or I'm talking about people who are spiritual. I mean, I think that's the way to get healed. You know, you have to have some kind of spiritual development. That's what people are lacking when they're sick. And but that doesn't mean they're Christian. It doesn't mean they pray to God. They could pray to the chair. They could pray.
I wouldn't call that spiritual.
But that's But that's, I don't know, that's what I would call spiritual. It's not enough, but for some people it's plenty.
Like finding that calm, that quiet.
Right. Well, yeah, otherwise I might do something crazy. I mean, the time of stress and the world's going crazy, look for a place to time out. And that's, to me, for me, that'd be for prayer. But for them, I'm saying it might be just for meditation with nothing higher than themselves. Or, you know, a lot of people think of the oversoul, that type of thing. You know, we're all part of that oversoul. You're really praying to yourself, or the greater self. But, I know what you're saying, I'm not trying to, I agree, without a spiritual life, there's not much hope for wholeness.
I just meant that's one aspect, right. That, so that's part of
it. I guess, my concern is that, and I'm glad that I'm learning it from a Christian perspective, I mean, I haven't had enough of that. But at the same time, when I came here, I didn't want that to be the focus, or the only focus. And it seems like it has turned out to be naturally. But I just wanted to interject into myself and do it. It must be another way. People who don't proclaim Christianity as their faith. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I guess. And speaking of the church as a healing community, I, as a Christian, can only find my wholeness in.
As in the community.
In that.
There's different. For a Christian, I can say that for myself, it holds true, but I can't say that for a person who is a Muslim or a person who believes.
But that person has to find it. I can't find it for that person. I can find it.
Right. I guess, again, my problem is I can't be arrogant enough to think that I have the only way to go.
So it's like recognizing that others can find
it.
Right.
But I can't do it for them. They have to find it.
Right. But I get, you know, I keep hearing Christians say, this is the way, the only way. I don't believe that.
Didn't Christ kind of, well, I mean, he achieved another fold too.
Christ said that, so what do you do?
What about when he said his
own? He said the way. He said the only way. I don't know, he said the only way.
So, I mean, that's a question I have.
He says no man comes unto the Father but
that. But that could be the Christ spirit, which is more than... I mean, that's what inclusive language is talking about. I hear that. Not the person Jesus, but the spirit of Jesus.
That, you know, no person comes to God except through Christ. Because what you're talking about is something I struggle with too, with Jewish or Muslim friends.
Well, it states that in the Bible, of course, but then again, the Bible is written within a Christian context, or within people for whom that experience was true, and all I can say is that that experience is also true for me, but I don't find that I'm the one to say that there are not other ways to God, and so it's not my business to judge that. I'll have to leave that up to God.
You're saying that it would, the statement that was limited by the context. No, that's not what you're saying. I guess.
You mean? I would say about the Bible that it is God's inspired word, but it is written by people who were in a certain cultural context, and it has its limitations.
I guess my struggle with that comes to the place where he has said there's no other way to God except through Christ. We also believe that God and the Son, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit are one. And what you start to say there, I have just come to recognize that it's one of the things I cannot know.
Right.
That God has chosen other ways to also reveal himself to others. I certainly am not the one that's to make that decision, and so I don't judge another person who is seeking another way or has found another way, because that will have to be for God to judge. But he has commanded me to share the news of Christ coming to earth as God with others, but it's for him to take control of
that. Yeah,
it's
that's
too big a job for me.
Go be disciples, call nations, baptize them, father, and all spirit. But as disciples, we're not to be judgmental. So
well, he said to teach and share, but
teach
then I'm
share,
not the one who does
have,
it. Then what?
Yeah.
And that's for God then to.
And I think we have often as Christians been so occupied with defining what was right faith and discarding other people's faith rather than to say, well, this is what is truth for me and I should try to live my life according to that and then go about doing it instead of judging other people that they don't do it the right way. I mean, there is that, that parable of God being a mountain and there are different paths leading up that mountain and the different world religions are the different paths and they're all seeking the same but they're taking different paths to that same center.
I wish it was in the Bible.
And one path might be, I don't know, more direct, easier, better, whatever than the other, but
love.
They are all, you know,
love.
Trying to lead the same. You don't find that is enough for you to say that is the truth for me. That is what I will live according to. That is God's word for me. Does that mean that you at the same time have to reject other people's understanding of ways to God?